Today, we're going to dive into the new spy movie, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. But don't worry, no spoilers. But we will dig into this a little so that when you go see it, this episode is going to enhance your viewing experience. Hi, this is Dan.
And Tom.
Of SpyMovieNavigator.com and our show, Cracking the Code of Spy Movies. Your spy agents bringing you the best coverage of spy movies in the world for almost 5 years. All right, let's get into it.
Now, Dan, actually, before you start, I do have to say, this is one of the hardest titles I've ever had to pronounce. That word ungentlemanly is a tough one for me.
I'm glad you said that, because I have a problem with that, too, and I thought I was losing my mind.
So you may hear me call it ministry during this episode.
Yeah, I think for short we will. All right, here's a synopsis from the official website. Just so you know, you have to have this basis for the movie. All right, so quote, based upon recently declassified files of the British War Department and inspired by true events, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare is an action comedy that tells the story of the first ever special forces organization formed during World War II by UK Prime Minister Winston Churchill and a small group of military officials, including author Ian Fleming. The top secret combat unit, composed of a motley crew of rogues and mavericks, goes on a daring mission against the Nazis using entirely unconventional and utterly ungentlemanly fighting techniques. Ultimately, their audacious approach changed the course of the war and laid the foundation for the British SAS and modern Black Ops warfare. Okay, they lay the groundwork here for us.
Yeah, and if you didn't hear that, at the beginning of the movie, they tell you it's based on real events, adapted from or something. It's a dramatization, but that pretty much sums it up there in their synopsis.
It does. All right. This title takes me by surprise a little bit. Number one, because it's hard to say, like you said, Tom. But I can't get the title, The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, out of my head when I hear this long one. And so, and it also reminds me of Dr. Strangelove, because the words in this title are really at odds with each other. You know, ungentlemanly warfare. Yikes. So from Dr. Strangelove, it reminds me of...
Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the war room. What is going on here? I demand an explanation.
All right, let's get into the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare.
Well, you know, you've got to remember that all's fair in love and war, so it doesn't have to be gentlemanly.
Yeah. All right. Now, my first word for this movie is wow.
That's a good word for it, because, you know, and for me, I was so excited to see this movie because. Yeah. There were two movies in 2024 I really wanted to see. I wanted to see Argylle, which was just a terrible movie, in my opinion. Okay. And fortunately for me, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare hit it out of the park. As much as I hated Argylle, that's how much I liked this movie. I really, really liked this movie.
It's an intriguing and well-done movie, and really... For everybody out there, it is a great reason to go to the theater and see this movie, because it is terrific on a big screen. Number one, we're going to talk about cinematography later. Fantastic. All right. The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare grabs your attention immediately with a fishing boat scene and Germans boarding the boat to see what was happening. Now they have your attention. It takes a bit of a breather as it winds back, I think, 23 days before the event that we just saw. So you get a little breather now and then in the movie, but not a lot. And during the breathers, you really have to pay attention. You need to know who the players are and what their role is in this World War II movie that pits the Germans against most of the rest of the world.
Yeah. As quickly as you can understand who each of the players are, the more you're going to appreciate this movie.
Yeah.
And one thing I appreciated in this movie was the pacing.
Yeah, okay,
because
good.
Oftentimes I'll sit there in the middle of a movie going like, oh, God, they're only 20 minutes in. This thing just, there was no looking at my watch. It just was well-paced telling the story, and just it kept going. And you kind of had an idea about where it was going to go, but you weren't sure what the ending was going to be.
Exactly.
But you knew how they were going to get to there, pretty much.
Yeah. And it's over 2 hours. This is over a two-hour movie. But like I said, the pacing was terrific. There weren't any slow parts.
No.
All right. The storyline is, as you know, from the trailers and the pre-release stuff. And if you haven't watched the trailers and whatever, hey, you might want to skip ahead 40 seconds or whatever, but this isn't a spoiler. It's in their stuff, right? You know that the Germans are using a neutral port, Fernando Po, off the west coast of Africa as a secret base to refresh their U-boat fleet with important materials, like CO2 filters and a bunch of other stuff. Without them, the subs cannot submerge. Y'all remember
filters
Apollo
are important,
13?
Dan.
Yeah, for a sub. That's the sub part.
Yeah, exactly.
We remember when Apollo 13 had an explosion in space and they were losing their oxygen. They had to use a lunar landing module to stay alive. But they had to fabricate CO2 filters for the lunar module, as the ones in the command module were round and the ones in the lunar lander were square. What a plan that was, huh? Yikes.
What's that line of the movie? Something like, this could only be a government operation.
Without the CO2 filters, they die. Same for the German U-boats.
So we have CO2 filters are needed under the water. We have CO2 filters needed up in the sky.
Absolutely.
We walk around here without CO2 filters.
Yeah. Thank God for air. All right, so this secret neutral base, and it was supposedly a neutral base, was being supplied with provisions needed for the U-boats by Italian ships and other ships and so on. So destroy the supply chain and perhaps the U-boat dominance of the Atlantic would take a hit. Humor appears throughout, but I would not call this a comedy. From their own website, they said this is an action comedy or a spy comedy. They said action comedy. And I'm going to say this. No, it is not.
There's a lot of humor in it, Dan.
There are plenty of amusing lines, but that was more or less the nature of the main characters and the confidence that they had that they were.
And some exuding. Of the quirkiness of them, too.
Yeah, the quirkiness. Yeah, exactly. That's a good word for it. Spies Like Us is a spy comedy. Undercover Brother is a spy comedy. The Man Who Knew Too Little is a spy comedy. The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare is not.
Okay. Yeah, but you will laugh during it.
Hey, the funny lines, and some were amusing. I say that. Yeah, absolutely. Were more like Bond quips on drugs. They were good, and they offered a tiny bit of relief, but were not a main feature. Death and violence are the main features here.
Yeah, but when the main character, Gus, has that first meeting with the brass.
Yeah, right? Yeah, that's a good
that
scene.
That was a very funny scene.
It's an amusing scene. I would say it's an amusing scene.
Okay, well, anyways. Yeah. Now, one of the reasons that I like this movie is that it is based on a single mission, right? So if you think about other really good movies that were mission-based, think Guns of Navarone or The Bridge Over the River Kwai.
Okay.
And I think one of the reasons they were so successful is they were built on a single mission. You weren't going all over the place with different stuff. This was, we have a mission to do. Let's see if we can get this mission done.
Okay.
And there aren't any love interests in this thing, you know, thrown in. If you remember in 2021 movie, Operation Mincemeat, they added that lover relationship, which to me ruined the movie. Because movie was about a really cool operation.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to throw this love interest stuff that wasn't real for whatever stupid reason, and it detracted from the movie. So we didn't have that here.
Good.
We didn't have any action for action's sake scenes. Wherever there was action, it was needed. There were no convoluted, we have a mole additions. I mean, it was clearly a clean line drawn, dramatizing a real world mission from World War II and how this mission helped shape the war and the role of espionage and black operations in the UK.
That's true.
I mean, and now the other thing I'll say is I said a clean line. I mean, that's the path of the movie. This thing has an R rating, and it is well-deserved here in the U.S., mainly due to its violence. There's a lot of violence, but I didn't find it gory.
I mean, I know what you mean.
Yeah, so there's a lot of violence there, you know, people getting killed, like, left and right.
Yeah.
And there are many different ways people die, and each character seems to have his or her specialty, which is pretty cool because they're all different.
And I like the variety of weapons, too, that they use. You know, there's some throwbacks there to other movies, but... Well,
and there's,
like you
and
said,
there's truth to those weapons.
Yeah. I like what you said about the Guns of Navarone, the analogy there, and the Bridge Over the River Kwai. But really, in the ministry, there really are two missions, really, or one very tough mission inside another very tough mission.
Well,
you know, in the beginning, what he's got to do, right? So,
yeah,
I mean, that's two. So I think there's actually two. Now, for me, I saw a bit of the Dirty Dozen in here and a bit of the Secret Invasion. We have an episode out on the Secret Invasion, so take a listen to that one. In these movies, they put together a ragtag team of misfits and criminals to conduct a secret operation. And yes, the SOE, the Special Operations Executive, is running this operation in the ministry, and it is indeed Operation Postmaster, which was a real World War II operation. And yes, Ian Fleming had something to do with it in real life and in the movie. I also see what we have seen in a lot of classic spy movies, a device called the double pursuit. Remember, in the 39 Steps, Hannay was being chased by the police for a murder that they thought he committed, but also had to avoid the powers that be behind a secret organization who knew now that Hannay could cause them some serious troubles. So Hannay had nowhere to turn for help. Well, here we have multiple uses of this concept, really, because the mission, the operation, was Churchill's secret, as he says. And now only his close circle knew that he was going to try this operation because Britain was desperate. They needed supply ships to get through to them, and they actually needed the United States in the war. So this team conducting Operation Postmaster had to avoid both the British and the Germans as they carried out their mission.
Yeah, no, you know, one of the things with that, Dan, is it's an interesting twist you look at it there. Yeah. Because, yeah, I saw the, you know, you had the two sides, but I never put it together with the 39 steps, but you're spot on with that.
No, thanks.
Yeah. And likewise, I mean, Churchill was in the same boat.
Right? No pun intended there, right?
Yeah, not at all, right? Right. He couldn't let the powers find out what he was doing here.
That's right? True.
So he had the Germans to worry about, and then the team he put together to worry about, and all the high-ranking officials in the UK who wanted him to do something different to worry about. So Churchill was sitting on an island.
Yeah. Again, I love this double pursuit concept. I mean, you see it often in spy movies. And throw in a little Kingsman here for the action sequences, I see, and especially like the church fight scene in Kingsman: The Secret Service, 2014, and maybe a little bit of Inglourious Bastards.
Yeah, there's a few things. There's a few tie-ins with Inglourious Bastards here.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I will say this, though, Dan. Yeah. There is no fight scene that can beat the church fight scene in Kingsman: The Secret Service.
I tell you,
that was an amazing fight scene. There were some really good fight scenes in this movie, but that's my favorite of all time.
Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about that stuff, but man, yeah, this is incredible because you see about 100 of those. All right, and there was a lot of excitement about Henry Cavill, obviously, in this one, because many articles, of course, they're saying that this character, that the one he played, Gus March Phillips, inspired Fleming in his creation of James Bond and how Bond was. Well, all right. We know Fleming himself has said that Bond was pieces of a lot of people that he knew in his lifetime and in his career. So maybe Phillips was a partial inspiration. I don't know.
Well, now on Jimmy Kimmel the other day, last week, promoting this movie, Henry Cavill actually said that Gus was the inspiration.
So. Well, yeah, that's Henry Cavill saying it. Though. What did Fleming say? Fleming, in his own words, said, hey, he's components of lots of people. So I'm going with Fleming.
You're going to trust him at his words, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's go forward here then. And we've told you that this is based on a real mission.
Yeah.
In fact, like I said before, they put this up on the screen before they start.
Yeah.
Now, we're not going to go into all the details here because this is a non-spoiler event, but we will say in this movie, there was something called the Vulcan, Duquesa d'Aosta, Maid of Honor, Lagos, and Fernando Po. These are all either real vessels or places that were involved in the real mission.
Yep.
So they brought that forward in here.
Yes.
Right?
Cool.
And Dan, you said this before, the name of the mission is Operation Postmaster. Now, my guidance to you, if you don't know that mission and you're going to go see this movie, don't look up Operation Postmaster first.
Yeah, don't look up all the details.
Yeah, we've told you enough of the background you need to know.
Yeah.
But don't go into the details of it. Now, when you're done, take a look, you know, go look it up online and go like, oh, wow, they really did nail this thing.
Yeah.
With the way they did that. So just be careful of that. But it is based on that real mission.
Yeah. And you're watching this movie for 2 hours. And I have to say, the acting was outstanding. Everyone did their part and did it well. The cinematography was cool. There were some great shots, sweeping shots, colorful harbors, parties, and costuming. All solid.
Oh, and how about that green dress? Oof.
And the green dress on Marjorie, on the character Marjorie, that's something to take a look at.
Now, you mentioned the cinematography. Ed Wild, I thought, did a really good job with this.
Yes.
And then he's done work with Guy Ritchie before, so they seem to be a fairly good team.
Yeah.
Now, we mentioned that those vessels and those places were real.
Yeah.
Most of the main characters are based on real people from the mission.
That's true.
So you have Alan Ritchson, who I don't know if you can have a larger human being. The guy is just enormous.
Yes, he is.
And he plays Anders Lassen. Alex Pettyfer plays Jeffrey Appleyard. Hero Fine-Tiffin plays Henry Hayes.
Yeah, terrific.
And Cary Elwes plays Brigadier Gubbins, or M.
Yes.
Freddie Fox plays Ian Fleming. Roy Kinnear plays Winston Churchill. I mean, as you said, Dan, this is an excellent cast.
Yeah.
And again, all of these people were based on real people. Now, there was one exception, because the character Henry Hayes in the movie was based on Graham Hayes.
Yeah.
And I don't know why they changed the name.
I have no idea why they would do that.
It's kind of different.
Maybe now, the some family of these, didn't want their name in there or something. Who knows?
That could be.
Yeah.
Some of the actors here have a spy movie or spy series background. So, for instance, Richardson was Reacher. Mm-hmm. Freddie Fox was in the Apple Plus series Slow Horses, where he played James Spider Webb.
Yeah.
Roy Kinnear played Bill Tanner in the last four James Bond movies.
Yeah.
And Alex Pettyfer was in Chief of Station. There are three other actors I want to call out because I thought they played their roles very well. And the first is Isa Gonzalez, and she played a character named Marjorie Stewart. She was really good in this.
She was terrific and stunning.
Yeah. Well, it was to me at first, you know, I'm looking, okay, that's not Gal Gadot. And then when she comes on that green dress, I had to do a triple take.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
But so anyways, Marjorie Stewart ended up marrying Gus in real life.
Yeah.
But I've not been able to find a direct tie-in of her character to the operation itself.
Yeah, right.
So she has a very large role in this movie, but I think it's fiction.
Yeah.
You know, that's part of the dramatization,
Yeah. This isn't all word for word real.
Yeah. And then you have Babs Olusanmokhin, who played a character called Heron.
Yes.
Henry Golding played Freddy Alvarez.
Yes.
Now, I've not been able to find a real-world reference to either of their characters, but Heron really sounds like an amalgamation of, and really kind of based on, this one character, Richard Lippitt, who was real, who did similar things to what Heron did, but I think they kind of morphed him in with a couple other real-world characters when they created him.
Yeah, and of course, at the top of the cast, of course, is Henry Cavill. One of our favorite roles we've ever seen him in. He plays the real life person, Gus March Phillips.
He was great in this.
Yeah, he's terrific. Cavill is great at this role, and he really looks against type from what we normally see him. He's usually clean shaven, mostly shaven, pretty boy kind of guy. Here, he doesn't look like that.
he's not looking like you normally see him here, that's for sure.
No.
And it's nice to see him do that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Now, there's one character in this movie that drove me absolutely crazy.
Okay.
And usually I'm pretty good to say, okay, here's an actor or an actress in the movie, and here's where I've seen them before.
Yeah.
Well, it took me over half of this actor's screen time before I remembered he was a character in the movie Inglourious Basterds.
Hey, there you go. There it is and again.
Inglourious Basterds. When it hit me, I almost shouted out, hey, that's, and then said the name of the character.
Oops.
Fortunately, I didn't. There were enough people in the audience that wouldn't have been good.
Yeah.
Now, okay. His role here is very opposite what he did in Inglourious Basterds. Mm. And anyways, this actor's name is Till Schweiger, and he plays the character Heinrich Luhr. Now, Till is a huge star in Germany, but he hasn't done many UK or US movies. Although he did play the watchmaker in Atomic Blonde. Now, all of that said, I'm just going to tell you, when you see Lure, think of the movie Inglourious Basterds. It'll help you remember the role. I'm not going to let you know what it is because that revelation was fun because it's so opposite the character he played in that other movie.
And he's terrific. He's terrific in this. I mean, his facial expressions, everything, just fabulous. I mean, it's acting through and through. His whole body is acting.
So yes, he does a great job here.
Yeah.
All right, and I said that we were going to talk a little bit more about Inglourious Basterds. That's not the only tie-in.
Yeah,
okay. One of the characters gives himself away because of the language thing in one of the scenes.
Yeah.
So if we remember in Inglourious Basterds, Lieutenant Archie Hickox, played by Michael Fassbender, gave himself away with a language issue.
Mm-hmm.
So language can be a problem in the espionage world.
Yes.
You can see in this movie how it was resolved.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. When we talked to the real CIA spy, he told us that. You better be good with languages.
Yep.
Because if you screw up, you have to be perfect. Be in serious trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So this is an excellent cast.
Yeah.
And there's some great tie-ins to the real people who were involved in this mission. And I also thought that the company worked very well together. The chemistry was there amongst the actors. So just really well done.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, kind of like the Mission Impossible guys working together. It was kind of that cohesiveness. So I agree. The casting was terrific. And each came off as believable characters that you were rooting for. So they win you over quickly. Let's talk about Guy Ritchie directing. Guy Ritchie directed this enjoyable movie, and he did, as you recall, the Sherlock Holmes movies with Robert Downey Jr. and Jude Law. In those movies, Holmes was super fast, and Ritchie used slow motion to show us how fast Holmes was in his actions. Here, forget it. He forgets the slow motion. This is rapid fire action at full speed, or maybe even more than full speed, and it works. It works. Yep.
Now, he also gave us another movie that I really liked, which was Operation Fortune Ruse de Guerre last year.
Yep.
Right. I really liked that one. And so it's nice to see two successful Guy Ritchie movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wish Matthew Vaughn could follow on with that and actually have a couple back to back that work.
Yeah. That would be good.
Now, Dan, you mentioned a bit ago that you saw some of the elements of The Dirty Dozen, The Secret Invasion, and other movies here.
Yeah.
And I want to point out a few more real-world connections, as well as some connections to other spy movies.
All right. I love it.
And the first one here, I'm going back to exactly what you said. Yeah, the way the team was assembled, it reminded me of the movie Silent Enemy.
Oh, yeah, that was a good one.
Putting the team together there. The team was assembled, but they didn't train for a mission like the one they undertook.
Right.
I mean, it's pretty much the same thing here in Ministry. Another thing was the secrecy of the team. I mean, Churchill put it together with Brigadier Gubbins and Ian Fleming's help. Remember, Fleming had a British intelligence background.
Yes, he did.
And you see him come up in a lot of these movies because he was involved with British intelligence at kind of the formation of some of these organizations.
In the movie, they say it too. He worked for Naval Intelligence. Now he's working for me.
Yeah. Now, there's one more similarity I really like here.
Okay.
And this is that the conflict between other members of the government and this team on this operation.
Yeah, we've seen that before.
Yeah, we've seen it many times, right? Yeah. So if you think about James Bond and License to Kill,
the team
says pretty much, you know, up yours to their management, and they're going to go do what they want to do. I mean, even Ethan Hunt in Rogue Nation, right? It's the conflict between the two halves,
right?
The people doing the work versus the bosses, if you will, and how things play out. And if you also think about all of the conflicts M had with his or her superiors in the Bond series, where they kept saying, we got to shut you down, you guys aren't worth it or whatever. Yeah. And then they come and save the day.
Yeah.
It's the same thing here, but nobody really knew what was going on because Churchill had put this together in secret.
Absolutely.
So all of these people who are telling him, you got to do this, were actually violating what Churchill wanted.
Oh, yeah. Well, Churchill's violating the letter of the law for them. They wanted to stick with it. And then they were mad at him for doing it. It's like, hey, your head is going to be on a platter after this, you know, whatever. So,
you see that in Bond all the time with them, right?
Yeah, so we're going to do it anyway.
Yep. There's a nice corollary there.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about the writers because the writers did a fantastic job here. I noticed something else from License to Kill, too. You mentioned that. And we'll talk about that in a second after we talk about the writers. The writers here did an outstanding job creating and weaving a heavy action movie into a story that you could pretty much understand and be on the edge of your seats for most of it. And they took a real life Operation Postmaster and created a very solid and entertaining movie for us. That was Paul Tamasi, Eric Johnson, Arash Amel, and Guy Ritchie, who did some of the writing for this.
Screenplay.
Yeah, the screenplay. So in general, I thought the dialogue was witty and believable, especially given the characters that these actors were playing.
Those were the people that did the screenplay.
Yeah.
Now, this movie was based on a book called The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, how Churchill's secret warriors set Europe ablaze and gave birth to modern black ops.
There you go.
By an author named Damian Lewis.
Yes.
So you want a long title. That's a long title.
Yeah.
But so I want to give credit to him because he actually wrote the story that they then based the screenplay on.
Absolutely. Great. All right. So we hear a line right out of Casablanca in this movie. Now, Casablanca, by the way, came out in 1942, right? But it came out after the real Operation Postmaster happened. But quoting a line from that movie was really a bit of a stretch here.
You mean they weren't time accurate?
Darn. They were not time accurate. All right. We also heard a line from Shakespeare, or at least the paraphrase of a line from Hamlet. The lady doth protest too much, methinks, is the real line. And we see an homage, I think, to License to Kill in one scene towards the end of the movie. You'll remember that one. You'll see it when you
hang
see
on
it.
A second. Let me think about that.
Yeah, when you see it, you'll.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay.
We'll remember it. All right. Let's get to the music. The music. Hey, the music was, I thought, both haunting and tense. Christopher Benstead wrote the score, and I liked it a lot. It added drama, really, to every scene. Now, keep in mind, he did Aladdin, he did Operation Fortune, Ruse de Guerre, and The Wrath of Man, too. So he knows how to score.
He knows how to score. Okay. And he'll appreciate that, I'm sure.
And has worked with Ritchie before, too. So, hey, what do you think?
Right. Yeah. Both he and Ed Wild had worked with Guy Ritchie before. So it's a familiar team for Guy Ritchie and a successful team.
Yeah. Yeah. What did you think of the music?
Yeah. I actually liked it a lot. And I thought that the work they did in putting the music and raising tension in some of the scenes, that was excellently done. And some of the stuff that was humor, the mood of the music changed appropriately. So I thought that was good.
Yeah. It was a great score. All right. Now, the song Mack the Knife plays an important part in this movie as well.
We hear it a couple of times.
Yeah. That was a 1928 song written by Kurt Weill, W-E-I-L. Who was Lottie Lenya's husband at the time. You remember Lottie Lenya, Rosa Klebin from Russia with Love. All right. So while this song is playing, of course, we see cuts to other scenes, making the lyrics more meaningful. That's all we're going to say here. But you will enjoy that scene. It's fantastic.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Absolutely fantastic. All right. There is nonstop action in this movie, and the main characters, with what they do, how they kill, and their cavalier attitude towards doing all of this, in my opinion, makes James Bond look like an altar boy. I mean, he's just...
they seem to like to kill.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I mean, the total body count, he can't even begin.
Yeah, I wouldn't know where to start counting on that.
Yeah, and like we said before, there are a couple of missions in this movie, and both are very exciting and very, very bloody. But like you said earlier, Tom, it didn't freak you out. It didn't turn you off. It was like, okay, these guys are doing something they need to do, and boom, they're good at it.
Yep, absolutely.
And the ending, I thought the ending was terrific.
Yes, it really was.
Yeah.
Okay, now let's talk about this as a spy movie itself, right? Because it has, since it's a spy movie, it needs to have some spy movie tropes in it. And we know it's a spy movie because there's a scene on a train.
There you go.
You almost always have to have a train in spy movies. I mean, we've seen, if you go back to the 1926 movie, The General, the 1928 movie, Spion or Spies, the 1935 movie, The 39 Steps, and many, many more spy movies, including Bond and Mission Impossible series.
On the Bond movies.
So there is a train scene here.
Yep.
And there's a classic espionage move that we've seen in multiple movies here. I'm not going to give it away.
I know what
you're
talking
about. But when you see it, you're going to be like, wow.
Yeah, okay, cool.
And it even tied me back to Live and Let Die. And and if you think about it, Dan, you may not have gone like, oh, that's like Live and Let, but to me it was like, oh, that's like Live and Let Die. I'm not going to say where, but once you see it, you'll recognize it.
Yeah.
And there are many other scenes where espionage is used to get information, maybe just even in a conversation with somebody, the way the questions are asked, pull information out to allow people to adapt or continue forward with their plan unchanged if needed.
Yeah.
And to me, the most espionage-y move in this occurred on the train scene. And again, there's a lot of other stuff that happens, but in terms of what you think of as what an operative might do in the field, there's one that just like jumps out at you.
Yeah. So don't worry, anybody out there, if this is a spy movie or not. We've got boats, we've got trains, we got explosions. So no worries. That's pretty much it. We know the backdrop of this movie, right? We know Fleming was involved in this. And in the real world, in Operation Postmaster, Fleming, prepared the cover story that would convince everyone that the British had no responsibility for this raid. That's pretty cool. All right. So, okay, we're intrigued because here again, it's Fleming, the creator of James Bond in real world espionage and operations. That's cool. All right.
So, and he knew how to tell a story.
Yeah. Tom and I aren't the only ones who like this movie. I talked to this one guy, Dan, after the movie ended and got his reaction to it. And here it is.
Saw the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. And what's your name?
My name's Dan.
Dan. Hey, I'm Dan, too. That's fantastic. And Dan, what did you think of the movie?
I enjoyed it. It was very well done, very well made, great cast. And it had a lot of star power. I don't think it's going to see any kind of Oscar nods come Oscar season, but it had a lot of good action, and it could have used some more violence. I'd like to see an unrated cut come out, you know.
How do you compare it to other movies, you think?
Like I said, you know, a lot of times, you know, when I see the trailer, when I see the movie, I'm actually kind of disappointed in but this one actually held up. It really, you know, came across.
Okay, that's
so
good.
So I was
point.
Very happy that, you know, a lot of what's in the trailer was in the movie, and it you know, it added to it, and it also didn't give away too much in the trailer. You know, a lot of times you see
Mission Impossible gave everything away in their trailers.
And so did, what was that other movie that, it was a film, kind of. Sisu. Yes, Sisu gave the whole film away.
Yeah, what's the point, right?
In the trailer, and it's like, when I saw the movie, it's like, yeah, there's no surprises or anything like that, but this was still good, still enjoyable.
Yeah.
Kept you on the edge of the seat at the end, what was going to happen and stuff like that.
So did you like the whole storyline?
I did.
I mean,
I
it's based on a true story.
Yes, right? Yeah, I did enjoy it. Like I said, I love Alan Ritchson. I love Alan Ritchson. That's why the main reason I wanted to come see it, with Henry Cavill
and
Isaac Gonzalez, and it was just a great cast, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, so you enjoyed the acting, too?
Yes.
About the cinematography?
I mean, it's something I could see again. Definitely, I could come see this again.
Oh, cool.
So,
all right, that's great. All right. Hey, thank you very much.
Sure, no problem.
Hey, thanks, Dan.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you.
Yeah, so that's a really good summary from him, Dan, because it ties up for a lot of the stuff we've been saying.
Yeah.
And this is just this isn't you and me. This is some guy in the audience.
Yeah, and so, I like that he said he'd see it again. We haven't heard that for quite a while.
Absolutely. There were 50 people or so in the theater. Remember, we were there on preview weekend, which was the week before the movie opens.
Right.
So a lot of people don't know about those.
Yeah. Which was good. I mean, it was nice and quiet in there. I mean, there were a few people laughing out loud at a couple of the amusing lines.
Yeah.
Which is good. That's good.
Yeah.
So that's good audience feedback. All right. I can see why this is based on Operation Postmaster, because it delivers.
Oh, geez, Dan. You really went there.
I did. All right. That's a wrap. This has been Dan.
And Tom.
Of SpyMovieNavigator.com and our show, Cracking the Code of Spy Movies. Do us a favor and subscribe to our podcast show through your favorite podcast app. That way you could be in the know and we'll reach more people. Thanks for spending time with us. We appreciate it.